Beruchim and Mseim. Ladies, you get extra credit today for making it to the Shi'ud in the inclement weather. The Fum Sa'ara Agra, according to the effort, that is the reward. So your reward is compounded today. My Rabbi Chacham Baruch Alav HaShalom used to say on a pasuk, Bebet Elohim Nehalech Beragesh. It says, to the house of God, we will go with feeling. Beragesh means with regesh, with gusto. So the rabbi would say that Beragesh is an acronym for Barad, Ruach, Geshem, Sheleg, Matar. So Beragesh. Beragesh is coming to hint to us all the different, weather patterns that happen. Barad, Ruach, Geshem, Sheleg. And today, you have probably all of them in one pattern. So, Chazaka Baruch. Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Shava, Vayelech Harana. Yaakov Avinu is forced to run away from his father's house. Esav was on the prowl. He had every intention to kill him. He took advice from his parents to get out of town. And the pasuk at the end of last week's parashah sessions, Vayishma Yaakov el aviv ve'el imo. He listened to his parents. Vayelech padena aram. And the pasuk says, Vayelech harana. He went to Haran. Of course, we know what happens in Haran. He'd meet his future father-in-law, Laban. He'd eventually get married to his daughters. And it was over there that he would produce the 12 Shebatim, Shifteya. However, there's one Rashi over here that I'd like to highlight. When we read the text, it says, Vayelech Harana, he went to Haran. I don't know what Rashi can tell us on this. It doesn't need any interpretation. It's self-explanatory. He went to Haran. Now she comes along and says, well, not so true. Yatsa lalechet leHaran. He went with intention to go to Haran. That was his intention. But as she implies that he didn't get there right away. Yatsa lalechet, which means when you ask them in Be'er Sheva, where are you going? He tell you, I'm going to Haran. Yatsa lalechet leHaran. But something happened on the way, and he got detoured. And we all know that he did get detoured, and he made a pit stop at the famous yeshiva, Yeshivat Shem Va'ever. That was the main academy at the time. And it says he checked himself in for 14 years. And after that, after the 14 years in Yeshivat Shem Ve'Eved, then he continued his way. Now he got to Shem Ve'Eved at the age of 63, after a whole career of learning. So it's interesting to note that after 63 years, he still felt that there's something he could learn. And he gets to Shem Ve'Eved, and 14 years later, at the age of 77, that's when he eventually gets to Haran, and that's when he gets married, at 77. So Yatsa Lalechet LeHaran. So my question was, what happened? Why all of a sudden did he decide to change his plan? Why did he change his itinerary? He had a direct flight to Haran. Something must have happened that he decided that he's got to go to Shem Ve'Eved. And I'm looking in the books, what happened? So I found a Hidah, Rabbeinu Chaim Yosef Ben Azulay, in his Sefer Nahal Kidumim. He has an interesting opinion. He bases it on the Gemara in Kiddushin, page 29. There the Gemara has a big question regarding getting married. The Gemara's question is not if she should get married or not. The Gemara concludes you should get married. The question is when. What's the question of the Gemara? So the Gemara's question is, should you learn Torah first or should you get married first? They're talking to young men. Should they go to yeshiva and learn? Or should they, maybe get married and then they'll go study Torah? What comes first? So the Gemara answers in a classic answer. It's a typical rabbinical answer, and the answer is it depends. Don't fall for those. Don't never answer a question in the affirmative or the negative. It's always, there's variables. So the Gemara says it depends. And the Gemara says, Halan vehalehu. You know, it depends if you're from Israel or it depends if you're from Babel. What's the interpretation? So the Gemara says that if a person is wealthy and he has money, so then he should get married first. Let him start a family, and he won't be overwhelmed by the bills. We all know marriage is expensive. Some marriages more than others. But if you have money, there's no problem. He'll be able to devote himself to learning, and the bills will get paid. However, the Gemara says, if a person is poor, so then he should not get married right away, because he will clearly not be able to continue his studies after he gets married. The Gemara says, "Rehayim b'savaro v'yasok b'torah." He has the yoke of panasa on his neck. Is he going to have a clear mind to study Torah? So to the poor man, they say, get all your learning years in before you get married. And then when you get married, then you're going to have to go, support your family and so on. So it really depends on his financial status. So says the Chidah, that when Yaakov Avinu left his father's house, he was a wealthy man. As we know, Yaakov Avinu was the son of a magnate. Yitzhak was a rich man, maybe one of the richest men alive. And I'm sure he gave him a lot of money for the road, for the trip. So he left as a rich man. So Yaakov Avinu knows the law. A rich man, let me go straight to Haran. And I'll go get married, and then I'll go learn. However, something happened on the way. And it's important to know this story. If you remember that when he gets to Haran, 14 years later, he gets to the well, the famous well, and he sees Rachel Imenu for the first time. And it says, when he saw her, he cried. Why should he cry? They're not even married yet. Why is he crying? So that she says, Lefi shetzafa beruach hakodesh she'ena nechneset emo lechbura. He already saw in ruach hakodesh that they're not going to be buried together. So he had a prophecy. Now, I am sure that when Rachel asked Yaakov, why are you crying, he didn't tell her this. Well, that's not something you're going to tell, somebody that, she's going to die, she's going to die on the road. So that's why that she brings another interpretation. And he says, Dabar acher, lefi sheba biyadayim rekaniyot. When he got there, he didn't have any money with him. He came empty-handed. Amar, so he said to himself, Eliezer Eved Abi Abba. Eliezer was the servant of my grandfather. Hayu biyadav nizamim usmidim ubigdanot. When he came to this town to find the shiduch for my father, he came with his wind, he came with, all sorts of jewels and all sorts of precious items. Va'ani en biyadi klum. He says that I don't have anything. So we see that Yaakov Avinu at some point, which we'll discuss, which is the theme of today's talk, lost all his money. Yaakov Avinu goes from riches, but not for too long. He only had the riches for a few moments, and then he went to rags. So when he gets to the well, he's crying. He says, I don't have the wherewithal to give Rachel the gifts like my grandfather's servant did. Now, that's not the point of my class today, but I just like to make this observation. Why should he cry for that? First of all, I'm sure Rachel doesn't care to get gifts. She's a tzaddikah. And the tzaddikim really don't care about money too much. So why should that bother him? Oh, my grandfather's slave had so much money when he came here, and I have nothing, and I can't give her any gifts. What I believe is why it would upset him. You have to remember the Avot, they loved following the tradition. And if they saw that their grandfather did something, they want to do the same thing. So they understood if Eliezer had the zechut to give gifts to the bride, that must be an important tradition. So what bothered him was that he's unable to follow the family minhag that does this to brides. But he wasn't too concerned about the money and the wealth and so on and so forth. Anyway, based on this, it seems that on the way to Haran he lost his money. So therefore he had to make a change in itinerary. Because now that he lost his money, the halakha says he shouldn't get married. Because how is he going to study Torah and pay his bills? So that's why the pasuk says, Yatsa lalechet leharan. He went to go to Haran when he still had his money. But when he lost his money, the chida says he had to make a detour and go to the Shivat Shem Ve'Eved and learn in order to fulfill the words of the Gemara. The chida's reconciliation is very nice. However, I have another interpretation that I'd like to offer today, and I believe it's a chidush. It's a novel idea. How did Yaakov lose his money? That's the big question. The stock market? Oh, so you know everything. So it says over here, I'm reading from the Midrash. I want you to hear the Midrash the way it's documented. So it says over here, it's a sefer, I'm reading from Ba'aleh Berit Abram. So he says, Kishibarach Yaakov Abinu leHaran, Sibah Esav leElifaz beno lirdof aharav leHorgo. Esav had a son. Esav's son is Eliphaz. Eliphaz is the nephew of Yaakov. Anyway, Esav told his son to go kill Yaakov. It's like the mob. He put a hit on Yaakov. Veradaf Eliphaz ahadei Yaakov. So he ran after him. Veyesigehu. And he reached him. Veyeshev Eliphaz b'rihuk arba amot. Eliphaz stood 4 amot away from his uncle. Vayachal lifkot, and he started to cry. Amar lo Yaakov, lama ata boche? Why are you crying? I want you to hear this version of the story. I know you've heard many versions, but this is a significant version. Amar lo Eliphaz, so Eliphaz says, Ma ese, she'avi gazar alay lehorgecha. My father decreed upon me that I have to murder you. And you know, I have to fulfill my father's will. Today's not the subject. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, alav hashalom, if you want to read it, he has a whole talk on Eliphaz, which is a bit schizophrenic. You know, he's so worried about fulfilling the mitzvah of kibud av va'em, but at the same time, he wants to murder his uncle. So he has to reconcile that he has some sort of disorder in his. And the way he behaves. Anyway, ve'od shenishba avi, my father made me swear, lichrot et roshi, im lo avi lo et roshcha. If I don't bring your head to him, he's going to have my head. And then he says, ve'ani yivshar li lehorgecha. I can't murder you. Listen why. Ki ata rabbi shelamatani Torah. Because you taught me Torah. Look at that. Eliphaz was a student of Yaakov. There's some versions that have him as a student of Yitzhak. But nonetheless, he had some connection to Torah, this man. He said, I can't kill my rabbi, or I can't kill the son of my rabbi. Lachin eni yodei amal la'asot. I don't know what to do. He's in a quandary. Amar lo Yaakov, kach memeni et kol nechasai, take all my money, v'al yedezit tekayim mitzvat avicha. And by that you'll fulfill the mitzvah of your father. She'ani hashuv kamet. Gemara says that in the Darim on page 64, that there's 4 people that are considered dead, even though they're alive. One of the 4 is a poor man. So he says, I taught you Torah, right? Now I'm going to teach you another Hadush that I never taught you. That if you take my money, halakhically, you have fulfilled your father's wishes. Umasha avika siba alecha lavi lo et roshi. But your father ask that you have to bring my head. תאמר לו שבדרך פגע בך ארי, וזרקת לו את הראש להציל את נפשך. Make up a story, tell on the way home, the lion met you on the road, and you took Yaakov's head, and you threw it at the lion so he doesn't eat you. So I can't produce the head because the lion ate the head. Then Yaakov's telling him how to get around it. Vinitratzelo Eliphaz baze. Anyway, Eliphaz was good with the idea. Miyad halach Yaakov lesfat ha-nahar, upashat et kol begadav, v'nechnas betoch ha-nahar. Now Eliphaz was mahmir. He was strict. He wanted to fulfill this mitzvah, you know, with all the stringencies. So he took everything. He took all the clothes of him, of Yaakov as well. He didn't leave him with anything. But where's Yaakov going to hide? He can't walk around without clothes. So he went to the river. And he disrobed. And he fast took everything. And now Yaakov Abinu is in the river. Up to his neck. He can't move. He can't go anywhere. You want to hear the end of the story? Okay, we'll continue. I know the end, so it doesn't bother me. But anyway, it says, Vayikach Eliphaz et kol hefsei Yaakov. He took all the items of Yaakov, and he went. And Yaakov is without any clothes in the water. Yarad pirushot, yadav pirushot lashamayim, bocheh umitpalel. His hands spread up to the heavens, and he's crying, and he's praying. How's he going to get out of this? How do you get out of this mess now? How is God going to save him? מיד הזדמן לו פרש אחד רוכב על סוס ממהל לרוץ. All of a sudden there was like a rider on a horse that's dressed in, you know, very, very fancy clothes, and he's riding the horse by the river. ויפול הפרש מהסוס לתוך הנהר. And all of a sudden he got bucked off the horse and he fell into the water. כשרגלו עדיין אחוזה בעוקף הסוס. His foot was still attached to the horse, so he got trampled in the water, he died. So Yaakov now, he knows that halakha, there's nobody here to take any of these stuff, it's hefker, doesn't belong to anybody. So Vayelech Yaakov Vayipshot et Begdei HaPeresh, he took the guy's clothes off, the rider's clothes, V'chibbesam, interesting, he washed them first. Or maybe it means that he dipped them in the mikveh because he didn't want to wear the clothes of somebody that might have been tameh. So he had the water next to him, so he dipped them in the mikveh. Vayilbishan, and he dressed them. Now Yaakov's wearing a costume. Last week he was dressed up like Esav. Now he's dressed up like this horse rider. Now watch what he says. Nahar zeh, this river where this event happened, haya karov lebet midrashot shel shem ve'ever. This was close to the yeshiva, this river. Vayelech Yaakov l'lmod sham Torah. So he decided to go study Torah over there. Why? Vayitman sham arba esre shanim. If you look at the language of Hazal, when they say that he went to Shem ve'Ever, it doesn't say he went, it says taman atzmo. All the rabbis that quote this Hazal, it doesn't say he went to learn in Shem Ve'ev. It says Taman Atzmo. What does Taman mean? He hid himself. Why was he hiding? What was he hiding from? From his brother, that he could have went to Haran to hide over there. What happened all of a sudden that he was forced to hide? So the Midrash writes, Pen yifki'u bo kiroveh ha-peresh ha-harug. Because he didn't want to get caught by the family of the rider of the horse. Because he's wearing the guy's clothes. Everybody knows those clothes don't belong to him. He's not a rider like that. And therefore, if he's going to walk around, they're going to say, you killed the rider. You took his clothes. You're a rotzeiach. So he needed to hide from the family, that they shouldn't convict him. When they're going to see him wearing the clothes of the parash, let me read that word, Yomru shu arago. They're going to say that he killed him. Now, after 14 years, which is after the statute of limitations is over. So it says, Yatsa mi-midrasho shel Eved. Ve'aya az ben 77 shana. So when I read this midrash, I understand now exactly what happened according to this. That means he really intended to go to Haran. The reason why he stopped off at Shem Ve'eved is not because necessarily he's following the halakha that he has to learn before he gets married. He went to Shem Ve'eved to seek asylum, which means he was now in trouble because he doesn't want to get caught. So the last place they're going to look is in yeshiva. So he went into the yeshiva and told, what are you wearing this costume for? Where's your black hat? Where's your white shirt? Where's your tzitzit? What kind of, we never saw yeshiva bucha like this coming and dressed like a, don't ask any questions, this is what happened to me. Just give me a stand, give me a table, give me books, and let me learn. But put me in a place where nobody can see me. Taman atzmo. So it's true, yatzala lechet naharam. So we see something very interesting over here. At this point, Yaakov Avinu is living a life of poverty. It should be noted that Yaakov Avinu would then go to his father-in-law's house 14 years later. I'm going very quickly. He would work for his father-in-law for 20 years. When he leaves the house of Laban, he leaves as one of the wealthiest men in the world. I think it's very significant to point out that Yaakov Avinu experienced both lives. He experienced the life of a poor man, and he experienced the life of a rich man. That was hinted to him, by the way, all this that would happen, when he had that famous dream. In this week's parasha, we read about the dream of Yaakov. It says, he dreamt, and he saw in the dream a ladder. Ve'ines sulam mutzav arza. Now, that's strange. Why would he dream about a ladder? Well, he wasn't a fireman. Well, why would he see a ladder in a dream? So comes the rabbi called Bala Turim, and he says, if you take the word sulam, he says, sulam is samich is 60, and lamed is 30, so that's 90, and then mem is 40, so that's 130. So he writes, and if you spell sulam with a vav, sulam, so it's 136. So he says, sulam bigematria mamon. He says, it equals money, mamon. Ubigematria oni. And it also is the same gematria as the word oni. Oni is poverty. Kizei yashpil vezei yarim. Because the world is like a seesaw. Zeyashpil, these people go down, and other people go up, and the world is constantly, the wheel of fortune is constantly turning, and those that are at a certain point on top of the wheel, as the wheel turns, they find themselves on the bottom. Zeyashpil vezeyarim. So, in that dream, God was hinting to Yaakov Avinu that he's about to take not a ride on a ladder, but a ride on a roller coaster. This is a sulam of a roller coaster. You're going to go from poverty. Now we can argue which is worse, which is a bigger test, the test of poverty or the test of wealth. Well, we agree that they're both tests. There's a famous piece from a rabbi called the Ketav Sofer. The Ketav Sofer is quoting from his father, Hatam Sofer. He says, Hine yesh nisayon oni v'nisayon osher. He says, nisayon oni, the test of poverty, she'af bechol zot sheyesh lo da'agat parnasa, of course he has a lot of stress and a lot of pressure, v'dohak, and a lot of, tension, enu mevatel meturat Hashem v'avodato. But it's easier in the sense that he's humbled, and therefore he might remain loyal to the Torah. V'yesh nisayon osher. But when a person has wealth, kol mashid libo hafetz oseh, he does whatever he wants. He says, and Hashem can come for him to forget God. והנה ניסיון העושר גדול מניסיון העוני. He says, because poverty at least brings humility to the person. So humility, he can come close to God. He prays, like we say on Shabbat, Shabbat aniim ata teshma, sa'akat adal tekshib betoshiyah. But the rich man becomes arrogant. And the arrogant man forgets God. And he does what he wants. So he says, that's how his father explained the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. The Mishnah says, Kol ha-mekayem et ha-Torah me'oni, sofa le-kayema me'oshen. That anybody that fulfilled the Torah when he was poor, he will fulfill the Torah when he was rich, when he'll be rich. What does that mean? I always learned, it's a blessing. That God says, if you were able to serve me when you were poor, one day God will give you money, and you'll be able to serve me when you're rich. But the Hatam Sofer says, no. These are successive tests. God says, I'm going to test you. But God always tests you from the easy to the hard. So first I'm going to test you, be'oni. He says, Kol ha-mekayem et ha-Torah me'oni. If you still serve God during the challenge of poverty, now I'm going to bring you to the next level. So for le-kayemam me'osha, now I'm going to give you the harder test. And Yaakov Avinu is the classic example that what did he do after he became poor? He went to the yeshiva. Yaakov Avinu, after he became poor, he could have done what some poor people do. They become angry at God, and they become bitter, and they have a chip. And Yaakov Avinu could have had that excuse, because Yaakov could say, I'm a tzaddik, my brother Esav is a rasha. How is it possible that he ends up with all the money, and I'm the one that's learning Torah for 63 years, now I don't even have a shirt on my back, I have to wear some guy's shirt from a horse, and I have to go hide in the yeshiva. What's the business over here? Yaakov Avinu doesn't have any questions. He passed the test of Oni with flying colors. Now, you may ask, why does he have to go through this? Did he make a sin that he had to lose all his money? Well, if I had to explain this according to the Kabbalah, I would explain it like this. Although I'm getting to a point, I didn't get to my point yet at all. I just have to give you the background before I tell you what I came to tell you. But somebody will ask me, why did Yaakov have to go through this? Why did God punish him that he became poor? If I were explaining it according to the Kabbalah, I would tell you like this. Adam HaRishon ate from the tree. The Zohar HaKadosh writes that he had Cain and Hevet. He had a third son called Shet. He didn't have Shet until he was 130 years old. What was he doing during those 130 years? It says he was fasting, he was making teshuvah, he was doing all sorts of tzigufim, all sorts of tikkunim, rectifications, in order to rectify the sin that he did from eating with the tree and so on and so forth. That was 130 years. And it says that Adam HaRishon had like two lives. He lived to 930. He had the first 130 years that he made tikkun, and then he had the last 800 years of his life that he also made different tikkunim, so it's altogether 930. The rabbis say that that's where we got the word ta'anit. Ta'anit means to fast. Because Adam HaRishon fasted for 130 years, and after he fasted for 130 years for that sin, then he lived the 800. If you look at the word ta'anit, the first letter is a taf, and the last letter is a taf. Ta'anit. Taf, taf. That's 800. And the middle letters of ta'anit is ani. Ani is actually 130. So therefore, it's taf, taf, ani. Ta'anit represents the life of Adam HaRishon. The 800 years that he had, and the middle years that was ani. Anyway, the Zohar HaKadosh writes that Yaakov Avinu was the Gilgul of Adam HaRishon. And since he was the Gilgul of Adam HaRishon, he came back to rectify the sin of Adam HaRishon as well. So he had to go through years of being an ani as well. That just like he went through 130 years, Adam HaRishon, Gematria Ani, so when Eliphaz takes all his money, this is a continuation of the Tikkun and Adam HaRishon, and Yaakov Avinu, of course, what does he do? He goes to study Torah. That's why if you look at the word Ta'anit, The middle letters are Ani, and the outer letters Taf Taf stands for Talmud Torah, which means that even though Yaakov Avinu became Ani, he went to the yeshiva, so he passed the test. That's if I wanted to explain it like that. But if I wanted to explain it something for us, I would tell you what the Ramban said. The Ramban always said, Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim, that whatever happened to the fathers would happen to the children. And therefore the Avot were preparing Jewish history. And it's inevitable in Jewish history that Klai Yisrael is going to go through times of Oni and Osher. Times of poverty, God forbid, like in the times of the wars, and God forbid in the times of depression. And then there's times of prosperity, where there's going to be Beracha. That's like after the war, and so on, maybe in our times, to a certain degree, to a large degree. And therefore, the Avot have to go through both scenarios, and pass the test in both scenarios. So when these events happen to Klal Yisrael, we'll have a chance also to pass the test. Because Yaakov Avinu was able to endure the test of Oni and still check himself into the yeshiva, so therefore that would guarantee Klal Yisrael throughout the generation that even though they would be in a dire circumstance, but they would still remain loyal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it happened to Yaakov. It's a preparation for the future of Klal Yisrael. Fine. What I came to talk about today is Eliphaz. I always wonder, I mean, it comes out that Eliphaz, he has a zechut. Listen, I'll tell you, he has a few merits. He has a few merits, this guy Eliphaz. Say what you want about him, but he has zechuyot. Number one, he didn't kill Yaakov. He didn't kill him. I mean, he came to kill him, and his father told him, if you don't bring me back this man's head, I'm going to replace it with your head. So he put his life in danger not to kill Yaakov. And when Yaakov tells him, take my money, and it's considered, he listens to him. And as a result of what Eliphaz did, according to the Midrash that I read, he has his zechut, because where did Yaakov end up as a result of this? 14 years learning Torah. Now, I agree, Eliphaz didn't have that intent when he did it, but God always rewards. If anybody had any hand in something that good came out, so Borei Olam gives reward. The Gemara says, for example, the great-grandchildren of Haman, Hadasha, became big rabbis. They converted, they became big rabbis. Haman. This Haman, what zechut does he have? But when he took off his ring, and he gave it to, when the king took off his ring and gave it to Haman, and Haman threatened to kill all the Jewish people, he caused the Jewish people to make teshuvah. Now, I know he didn't have that intention in mind. But nonetheless, God's very generous. God says, I'm going to punish you to the letter of the law, but I'm going to reward you to the letter of the law also. God says, I'm a strict, exacting punisher, but I'm also an exacting rewarder. So therefore, you get everything. And you were the conduit to something good. So I always wondered, do we ever see that Eliphaz gets some sort of reward for this? He did. He didn't kill his uncle. Actually, he brought his uncle to poverty, which led him to the yeshiva, which ends up helping us, like I just told you. Makes it tikkun b'adam rishon. I'll tell you what I did find. I don't know if this is going to help us too much, but this is what I did find. And if it doesn't help us, so you heard some stories. It's not the worst thing. There's a story that I found in the Gemara Gittin. I need to tell you three stories. The first story is in Gemara Gittin. It's on page 56. It's telling us of a fellow by the name of Unkelus Bar Klunikus. He's a Roman. Bar Achte de Titos, the nephew of Titos. Titos, we know, is Titus. Titus is the one that destroyed the temple. We had a nephew called Unkelus, the son of Klunikos. I don't know where Klunikos, again, like last week, like Turnus Rufus, he lost a bet, it must be, and he had to name his son Klunikos. Anyway, it says, Hava ba'er legiyure. This unkelus wanted to convert. Yes. He wanted to convert this fellow called Unkelus. Azal, askeletitos bin Gida. Unbelievable. So he made a seance. He made a seance and he did all this type of heebie-jeebie stuff, and he was able to bring back the soul of his uncle, Titos, from Gihinam. Titos's body was burnt, and his body was spread over the seven seas. Unkelos, the nephew, wanted to ask his uncle, who he respected, I guess, as an important guy, should he convert or not? Now, you got to figure that Titos is going to tell him absolutely. He sees the truth. He's in the wherever he is. He sees what the Jews are. He sees what it. So he says to his uncle, he says, "Amar le man hashiv ba'u alma." He says, "Uncle Titos, in the world that you're in, who's important?" Amar le Yisrael. He said, the Jews. He cannot deny it. So he says, "Ma'u le'idbuke behu." I'm thinking of attaching myself to them. What's your opinion? Amar le milayu nefishin. They have too many laws. Ve'lo matzit lekiyumayhu. You're not going to be able to fulfill all the laws. It's too difficult, Judaism. We have seven laws. Stick to the seven laws and you'll be fine. Zil igre behu. Go and fight them. Be'ahu alma, in this world, ve'haved esha. Whoever fights the Jewish people becomes big in this world. So you want to become famous? You want to become powerful? Like Hitler became powerful and famous because he fought the Jewish people. Whoever fights the Jewish people becomes famous. Forget about the converting. That was the advice Titos gave him. And then it says he went to a few other notables. He actually brought up the soul of Bil'am. And he asked Bil'am, you know, these are the all-stars. He says, listen, aren't you the nephew of Titos? Yeah, but I'm thinking you're converting. Converting? What do you want to convert for? The contrary, kill the Jewish people. They told him, anyway, what are they doing to you, Bil'am? And he tells him, you know, he's a very, very gruesome punishment. I don't want to go into it, but a gruesome punishment. And then he even brought up the soul of Yeshu. And he asked Yeshu, well, what does he think? And Yeshu told him also, don't convert, and so on. He took advice. Bottom line, the Gemara says, thank God he didn't listen to them. And he ends up converting. Unkelos, as you know, would eventually produce one of the most important commentaries on the Torah, and it's called the Targum Unkelus. It's in every Humash. Here it is. I mean, you look at the Humash and you see over here, Unkelus. I mean, he didn't even change his Greek name. He kept his name. And it is the most authoritative translation to the Torah, to the extent the Gemara says in Megillah, that this translation of Aramaic was actually given at Har Sinai with the Torah, but it was forgotten. It was forgotten. And Unkelus, the convert, in his brilliance and his genius, and he must have had Ruach HaKodesh, was able to to bring back this forgotten commentary, and we treat the Targum Unkelus as divine. Was given at Sinai. So he comes a tremendous Talmid Hakam, and he makes one of the most important contributions. He becomes, I mean, Rashi HaKadosh, whenever he wants to give us the real interpretation of the Pasuk, he'll say, Ayen Taf Aleph. Taf Aleph Targum Unkelus. Go look at the Taf Aleph, go look at the Targum. Or he'll say, Ayen Targum, or Ketargumo, he'll say, like the Targum said. That is the most authentic commentary. So look at this man. He goes from becoming, you know, a nephew to the biggest anti-Semite to the Gadol HaDor, because one of the most important Tanaim, he's a student of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. That is another episode with him. Oh, I don't know that. That's you got to ask in Kubal for that. But over here it says, in Gemara Avodah Zarah, on page Yud Aleph, page 11, story, Unkelus bar Klonikus, Igayer, he converted. Shadar Kesar Gundar Rumae Abatrayu. So when his uncle Titos heard that he converted, or his uncle Hadrian, I should say, he had some uncles that were all big shots. So his uncle was Hadrian as well. Hadrian was a big Roman general. He said, "What, this guy converted?" He was so angry. So he sent a group of messengers to Unculus to talk him out of it. Anyway, Unculus says, "What are you doing over here?" And he says, "We came to talk you out of it." He says, "What do you want to talk me out of it?" And he starts to explain him how beautiful Judaism is. And before you know it, they converted also. Now the guy says, "Where's the emissaries?" They said, "Don't ask." Now Unculus has a minyan. He made a minyan now. So he sends another group. Unculus talks to them. Now he has two minyanim. So finally he sends the third group. He says, "Listen, I want you to go there. Bring him back. Don't say anything. Don't open your mouth. Don't talk to the guy. Because if you talk to him, he's going to convince you." So what happens? They go. Unculus says, "Nobody here for." "We're taking you. We can't say nothing. We don't want you to..." He says, "Okay, you don't want to talk to me? I won't talk to anything. But let me just... You want me to go back to Rome?" "Yes, we need to take you back to Rome, to the Caesar. He's very angry at you that you converted." "Okay." On the way out, he puts his hand on the mezuzah, and he kisses the mezuzah. So they thought that was quite peculiar. So they tell him, "What is that? What did you just do?" They broke it. They opened their mouth. Now he starts explaining to them. He says, "Look at God of the Jewish people. A regular king, where does he stand in the war? The king stands in the back, and he puts all the soldiers in front. He says, look at God. This mezuzah is our protection. God stands in the front of the house to protect everybody behind them." When they heard that, they said, "Wow, what a religion. We're in also." And so finally, they couldn't control themselves. So they all committed. So first of all, you see that he was very, very influential. And you see that the Romans were not too happy about his rejection of their faith. The last story about Unculus, now that we're telling Unculus stories, is in the Midrash. I found the smallest words possible in the Midrash. I don't know why they don't make these books with bigger print. Nonetheless, the Midrash is in the book of Mishpatim, and the Midrash says that, again, Unculus Ager, Ben Achotosh Adrianos, it says he was also the nephew of Hadrian. Ayam Bevakesh Tetkayer, Ayam Mityarim and Adrianos. He was afraid of Adrianos. So according to this Midrash, he had intention to convert, but he didn't want to tell his uncle. He was scared to tell his uncle, because he knew his uncle would flip out. So he goes to his uncle one day, the Midrash says, and he tells him, "Uncle Adrianos, I want to go make business. Can you tell me how to make business?" He says, "Business? You're a rich man. We have the treasures of all of Rome. You don't have to make business." He says, "No, I want to do it myself. I want to learn the goings-on with people. And I came to you for you to give me advice." So he says, "If that's the case, I'll give you advice." Amar le, kol pragmatia she'ata ro'eh shefela ve'netuna ba'aris. Any business that you see that's low and thrown to the ground, lech ve'asok ba. Go and invest in it. Shesofa lehit'alot ve'ata mistaker. Adrianos, I don't know what business school he graduated from, but he knew a basic principle in business. Buy low, sell high. So he said, go find something that's very low and put your money in it, and then it'll go up, and then you'll make a lot of money. "Thank you, uncle. I'm going to take your advice." Where does he go? He takes a direct flight from Eretz Yisrael to Rome. From Rome to Eretz Yisrael. And he checks himself into the yeshiva of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. And they see that this boy is brilliant. Before you know it, they give him a brit milah, and they convert him, and he starts to teach Torah, and all of a sudden, his uncle finds out that his nephew is up to something, So they bring him back to Rome, and his uncle looks at him, and he doesn't look the same. You know, he came, he didn't have a beard, he had a little weight, now he got skinny from the Brit Milah, from the, whatever it was. He says, you don't look the same, what happened to you? He says, I converted to Judaism. You converted to Judaism? What got into your mind? So he says, uncle, I took your advice. He says, I didn't see anything in this world today that's lower than the Jewish people. He says, they're downtrodden, there's anti-Semitism, the people mistreat the Jews are a derision to the whole world. It's the lowest thing that I found. And when I went to the yeshiva to ask, they said, but in the future, the Mashiach is going to come, and the Jewish people are going to be on top. So I followed the business advice you gave me. Buy something that's low, and sell high. And of course, Adriano says, that's not what I meant, and but too late, he had converted already. So these are incredible stories about one of the great converts that came to Judaism. There is a rabbi called Rabbi Menachem Azariah Mipano. He wrote a sefer called Gilgul Neshamot. And he was he had a Kabbalistic brain to figure out the who's who. So in his sefer, he writes, Unkelus Hager, who Eliphaz Sheratza or Shelorata Laharog et Yaakov the Mitzvat Aviv. So when you ask me who is the Gilgul, there's your answer. Eliphaz would eventually come back as Unkelus Hager. And now I understand, because the Zohar HaKadosh writes as well, that Esav would come back. Esav would come back as Titus. So when you have this confrontation, or this conversation, I should say, between Unkelos and Titus, it's actually a conversation of Esav and Eliphaz. In the previous Gilgul, he listened to his father to a certain degree. Which means he didn't kill Yaakov, but halakhically he killed him. He took all his money. So therefore he needed to make a tikkun. So therefore he would go ask his father, Unkelos would ask Titus, should I convert? And what would he tell him? Don't do it. And he would not listen. And by not listening, he would make the tikkun of listening to his father in a previous Gilgul, at a previous time. But there's even more. The rabbis tell us that there's a halakha that says that if you are converted and the convert's father dies and leaves an inheritance, so the convert is able to split the inheritance with his brothers. He gives the brothers all the Avodah Zarah stuff, and he takes all the tennis rackets and all the stuff that's not Avodah. They divide the estate. And there's a book called Sefer HaDorot that says that's what happened to Unkelos. He converted, his father died. Now they were dividing the estate. And Unkelos knew the law that he could take the good parts and give the Avodah Zarah parts to the brother, and it's fine. Listen to what Sefer HaDorot says took place, and I quote. He says, "Ubetosifta perichet demai, shehmir al atzmo ma sheyarash imehav veholicho liyam hamelach." He didn't want to take the money. He took the money from his father's inheritance and he threw it into the Dead Sea. And the Mekubalim say why? Because he wanted to make a tikkun for what he did to Yaakov Abinu. In a previous Gilgul, Eliphaz took all the money from Yaakov Abinu and he gave it to his father. Here now, he's getting money as an inheritance. He said, I have to experience what does it mean not to benefit from any of the money. And therefore he put it in the Yam HaMelach. And then he comes along and he says, Katav Gamken, Unkelu Sagir Iborosh Eliphaz Ben Esav. ומהי טעמה יש לומר שהשליך חלק ירושתו לים המלח עד שלקח כל ממון יעקב. It goes on to say, look at how הקדוש ברוך הוא does מידה כנגד מידה. Eliphaz is the one that caused Yaakov to be poor. The Mishnah says, כל המקיים את התורה מעוני, סופו לקיימו בעושר. Eventually Yaakov would survive his poverty. He would learn Torah. Look at this. Look at the reward that Unkelos gets. You caused Yaakov Avinu to learn Torah for 14 years. Look at the result that Unkelos does not only convert, but he becomes the main commentator to translate the Torah. Nothing is wasted in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's reward. The reward is so precise. You were the one that was the impetus for Yaakov Avinu to pass the test of Oni, and he went to learn Torah as a result. And therefore, not only are you going to get a reward for not killing your uncle, you're going to get the reward that you're going to be a promoter of that Torah of Yaakov Avinu, that nobody can open up the Torah of Yaakov and explain it without the Pirush of Unkelos. But watch, look how precise the measure for measure is. כל המקיים את התורה מעוני, סופה לקיימה בעושר. That's what Eliphaz did. Eliphaz took away the money from Yaakov, and he put him on the road. After poverty, he became wealthy, and he passed the test of wealth as well. What happened to Eliphaz / Unkelos when he told his uncle, "Uncle, give me advice." What does it, uncle tell him? Find something that's very low, and invest in it, because something that's very low will become very, very successful. So he went and he looked in the market, and he couldn't find anything more impoverished than the Jew. And therefore he said, I'm going to invest in Judaism. It's kedai to become Yehudi. And as a result, why did he invest in it? Because they told him, Kol ha-mekayem et ha-Torah me'oni, sofa le-kayema be'osher. That's the story of every single Jew. The Jew's existence is mekayema me'oni. Even when we're living in times of prosperity. But the galut, the exile, thousands of years of exile, we're fulfilling the Torah under difficult circumstances. Even if the circumstances are not as difficult as they were during the times of the war. But we have different tests of exile. Look at the assimilation rate. We're fulfilling the Torah me'oni. There's tremendous nisyonot around. And that's what his uncle told him. There's a lot of laws. You're not going to be able to fulfill it. But when he went to the rabbi, he said, what's the end game? He said, don't worry. Those that stick it out during the difficult times, when Mashiach comes, they're going to be on top. Midah keneged midah. Eliphaz, that was the one that started the process in Yaakov's life. Of mekayem et ha-Torah me'oni, mekayem ha-Moshe. Look how he came back with that same advice of finding something that's me'oni that eventually become me'oshe. The lesson to us, I mean, I get excited from the Gilgulim. As you know, I love to know who's who and why things happen and everything is perfect. But the lesson, there's no moral in this. If you just say, oh, Gilgul, Gilgul, you don't take any lesson home with that. Although the lesson, I guess, is you see the beauty of the Torah, which is a lesson in itself. But to me, the lesson is, and this is, to me, a very, very, obligates us. Unkelos was sitting on top of the world. He had money, he had power, he had glory. What did he see in Judaism that it was worth it to leave all that? He must have seen a beauty. He must have seen something that's even more appetizing than what he had. That means Unkelos saw that whatever he's enjoying is not as precious or valuable as Judaism. And therefore he gave up everything in order to join the Jewish people. And as he said, I found the lowest item in the world. The lowest item that's trampled. What do you need it for? All your advisors told you don't do it. But he saw the beauty of it. And I say to myself, shame on us who were born Jewish and we don't see the beauty of what we have, and our children don't see the beauty, and they want to forsake what they were given and go somewhere else to an empty pit that's filled with snakes and scorpions. If our enemies gave up their good life to be part of Klal Yisrael, us that are born in Klal Yisrael, we don't feel the same fortune, the same good luck, the same value that these people did. This reminds us that if our enemies came to join the religion, there must be something there. And the Baal Shem Tov said it, "Me'oyevai tehakemeni mitzvotecha." Sometimes you have to learn religion from your enemies. Sometimes our enemies know much more. And I'll conclude with one story that I always tell because it brings out the point. There was a professor who was in a college in the Ukraine, Odessa. He wasn't religious. He was a secular professor. And he didn't fulfill any of the mitzvot or nothing. And they came to him and they said, "We want to give you a promotion." He said, "Okay, beautiful, it's a lucky day." They said, "But on one condition, you have to forsake your Judaism." "I have to forsake my Judaism?" They didn't think he cared because he wasn't Jewish anyway. He didn't behave Jewishly anyway. So, but they just wanted to make it official. You know, you have to forsake your Judaism. And then you get the, because we have a rule in the college, bylaws, that professing Jew can be at such a high position. So you have to sign the paper that you'll forsake your Judaism, then we can put you in the... So the fellow answered the following, which I thought was brilliant. He said, "First of all, I don't know anything about Judaism to forsake it. First, let me study Judaism, and then I'll decide if I want to forsake it or not. But I cannot forsake something if I don't know what it is." He said, "It's like giving me an envelope, and the envelope is sealed, and you tell me to rip it up, but I don't know what's in the envelope. Let me open the envelope, maybe there's $1 million in the envelope. So I cannot make a decision to forsake something that I know nothing about. So give me the courtesy to study it." And then he said, "But the fact that you're so interested to take it away from me, that indicates to me that it must be very precious. Because why would you want something has no value? Just for the fact that you made a law that I cannot have a promotion unless I give you this. What do you know about this that I don't know about it? Why do you want this so much? Why do you want this more than me? What do you know about Judaism?" And the fellow went and studied Judaism. He left the college, he ended up becoming a rabbi in a kollel in Jerusalem. All from that one moment. And that's the lesson. When you see our enemies and their reaction to what we have, and you start to say, "Why do they hate us so much? They must know something. Why do they want to take our religion from us so much? Why do they kill us? Why do they break tombstones? What do they have against us? What do they want from us?" Must be they know that we have something very, very special. They're jealous of it. So I say to ourselves, we have it. We shouldn't have the same pride for what God gave us. And God is chose us from all the nations of the world, as we say. In any event, the other lesson that we learn, I'll conclude with this, is that as Jews we have to serve God like the ladder. Sulam is Gematria Mammon, 136. Sulam is Gematria Oni, 136. Yaakov was on the top of the ladder, and he was on the bottom of the ladder. And that's what Rashi says, Yatsa lechet leharam. His intention was to go straight to Haram. But once Eliphaz put him in the test of poverty, he said, "I must now pave the road for Klal Yisrael." So he said, "I must learn Torah." And by him learning Torah during his difficult times, guarantees that Klal Yisrael, even though they go through difficult times, they'll do the same. And Eliphaz that brought him to that, would end up getting his great reward by coming back as Unkelus, this time not listening to his father Titus at all, and eventually becoming the translator of the Torah. Yaakov Amin was the representative of the Torah, and then forsaking his Yerusha from his father in order to atone for taking the money of Yaakov Amin.